Hi, and welcome to Seeing Climate Change, the podcast that explores climate change through visual art, personal reflection, science, and conversation. I'm Alex, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Hannah.
In this episode, inspired by the William Benton Museum of Art's Seeing Climate Change exhibition, Catherine Andronowitz takes a walk through UConn's campus arboretum. Tune in to learn a little more about the trees around us.
Hi, my name's Catherine. And I'm standing next to the tallest tree on the UConn Stores campus, towering in the Great Lawn at over 110 feet tall, the equivalent of an 11-story building. Its trunk has a circumference of about 13 feet, meaning it would take 2 to 3 people to wrap their arms all the way around its base. Today, there's wind blowing through the tulip-shaped flowers that grow out of the ends of its branches. I've walked by this tree countless times, on my way to lunch at Whitney Dining Hall or driving by on Route 195. And yet, it wasn't until just a few days ago that I could identify this as a tulip tree, one of the largest native species of trees in North America. I'm not alone in my ecological illiteracy, and there's even a term for this phenomenon, plant blindness, or the inability to notice and appreciate the plants in our environment. The truth is, I don't need to be able to differentiate between a silver maple, sugar maple, and red maple in my everyday life. And don't all trees sort of look the same? But there's a unique sense of connection and power that comes from achieving this deep familiarity with our surroundings. Bioregionalism, the concept of aligning identity, culture, and land use with an ecologically bounded area, can be traced to the early practices of Native Americans. Their knowledge informed a generational responsibility to the delicate balance of regional ecosystems. My mother, a landscape architect, is one of these people who is incredibly skilled at identifying different plants.
Spruce are sharp and square. When you touch them, they hurt. And then the firs are flat and much softer. That's how you know the difference between a fir and a spruce.
As a kid, her ability to recognize flowers, trees, and shrubs seemed magical to me. But this was not a supernatural gift. It was something she learned right here on the UConn campus, a campus that doubles as an arboretum. Let's back up. What exactly is an arboretum? Well, it's kind of like a museum of trees and shrubs collected for conservation, research, and education. These tree hubs can be found all around Connecticut, usually free and accessible to the public. Arboreta are important to conservation efforts for trees endangered by climate change and globalization. These threats include wildfires, drought, extreme temperatures, global diseases, or invasive insects like the emerald ash borer. For example, the American elm tree had been nearly wiped out in the 1930s because of a fungal infestation known as the Dutch elm disease. This is significant in Connecticut's history, since cities like New Haven, also known as Elm City, had its streets lined with these trees. And in fact, almost every town in Connecticut has a street named after elms. You can find one of these American elm trees on a small street across from Mirror Lake, ironically called Oak Hill Road. Usually these are beautiful trees with dark gray bark and branches that spread like a fountain, creating a large canopy of shade for warmer months. In the fall, its leaves turn a gold color, but the one up here doesn't exactly look like it's doing too well. It doesn't have its usual large canopy. Its top looks severed at various branches. The UConn Campus Arboretum hosts a number of exotic and endangered herbaceous plants. But native plants like the elm are still most important when thinking about mitigating climate change. Because of their resilience, native trees are crucial in nature-based climate solutions. Trees contribute more to their native ecosystems, hosting more bees, butterflies, and caterpillars than near-native and exotic plants. Take, for example, the giant sequoias and redwoods native to the Sierra Nevada mountains, where they can grow to heights of more than 275 feet and live to 3,000 years. These old-growth forests are exceptional at carbon sequestration, or the long-term storage of atmospheric carbon. They're basically the original carbon-removing technology. Outside of their native region, however, these trees do not grow as high and are less resilient. This means they store less carbon and for shorter periods of time. So you might be surprised if I told you there's a giant sequoia on our campus, hiding in the most unexpected space.
In a small corridor behind the Torrey Life Sciences building, you can find a not-so-giant giant sequoia, standing at around 5 to 6 feet tall. It has reddish-brown bark, which is known to be unusually fire-resistant. This is also the only coniferous tree discussed in this episode, meaning it is a cone-bearing evergreen tree.
The native sassafras tree, on the other hand, is an aggressive pioneer that can take root on roadsides and abandoned fields. A variety of birds eat this tree's fruit. You can find one of these on campus across from the Dodd Center, situated amidst construction work as well as bustling sidewalks and roads.
This particular tree is quite mature, standing at nearly 50 feet tall with cinnamon brown ridged bark. It's usually recognizable for its sweet-smelling branches and having some leaves shaped like mittens, but right now all those leaves have fallen.
Many traditional root beers were made with the sassafras tree, but this has since been banned by the FDA because of the toxicity of its oil, known as safrole. Native Americans used its roots and berries to remedy a variety of ailments, like scarlet fever or skin diseases. Because of its many benefits and many dangers, consuming sassafras has become quite a subject of controversy in recent years. Another culturally significant tree is the ginkgo tree. Native to China, this tree's seeds have been used for medicinal purposes, and its nuts are incorporated into East Asian cuisine.
This tree is tough and widely planted. It's successful even in urban settings. Trees in urban settings help to reduce the urban heat island effect, encourage people to get outside, and even cause people to drive slower as the road looks narrower. In cities like New York, people will go out to harvest and locally consume the ginkgo nuts. These harvesters often do so to embrace or reconnect with their culture, highlighting both the physical and cultural importance of these trees. What's more, the ginkgo tree is the oldest known species of trees. It has existed unchanged for nearly 200 million years, alongside dinosaurs like the Stegosaurus or Allosaurus. Out of 5 groups of plant seeds, the ginkgo is the only surviving genus of its group. It's a solitary and wholly unique tree. In fact, this tree was so rare in the wild that it was believed to be extinct. The ginkgo is so widespread today because of cultivation in China around 1,000 years ago. It's an example of positive human intervention, conservation of plant diversity through cultivation.
While I am far from being an expert in trees, the small things I have learned brought a new awareness into my daily life. I've explored new corners on campus that I wouldn't have otherwise gone to seek out. And now, every time I walk by the sassafras tree or tulip tree, there's a voice in my head that recognizes it as if saying hello to a friend. It's important to cultivate this empathy for plants so that we can value our ecosystems at large. This process has allowed me to feel part of not just the Yukon community, but a regional community of all living matter that has existed longer than any of us have. So, although this episode was about branching out on campus, I guess what I found is that I'm more rooted. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Check out the show notes for more information about the topics covered in this episode and for a link to the William Benton Museum of Art's website.
The Benton is the official art museum for the state of Connecticut, and admission is always free for all visitors. The museum is located on the University of Connecticut's Storrs campus and is open Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. But make sure to check the website for updated hours before you arrive. We encourage you to visit.
The Seeing Climate Change podcast is a production of the Fall 2023 cohort of the Digital Media and Design and History Department's course, Collaborating with Cultural Institutions, taught by Professor Clarissa Seglio. This podcast was produced in collaboration with the William Benton Museum of Art and with the support of WHUS Radio. The series' theme music was composed and performed by our own Alexander Filippidis.
Before we sign off, we hope that you will check out the other episodes in this series. Thank you again, and see you in the next episode.